Unleashing the Beast. Mark Morano is unleashed on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, breaking news. Climate Wire, the E&E News has just come out. RFK Jr. wants to poach climate voters from Joe Biden and climate skeptics from Donald Trump. Whoa! And guess what? I'm quoted in the article. This is fascinating. They're claiming that RFK Jr. has a strategy to get the climate concerned voters of Joe Biden and also the climate skeptics of Donald Trump. That's a tall order. This is an article by Scott Waldman, who's been on sort of an RFK beat. I've talked to him before, sent him my information. I mean, I've sent him quotes. He's interviewed me. Let's just read a little bit of this. RFK Jr. sees an opportunity in the nation's bitter divide over climate politics. And by the way, I generally agree with this narrative so far. The independent candidate, RFK, is making a play for climate-minded voters. Those are the people who are worried about climate change, who compose much of President Joe Biden's base, as well as climate skeptics who make up former President Donald Trump's constituency. His strategy includes staking out positions well to Biden's left, such as calling for a permanent ban on natural gas exports. I just want to comment on that. And I've actually openly talked about this on the show before about the natural gas exports. RFK may have a point on this. I don't necessarily see this as a left-right. This was illegal up until about 2015, and it had been legal yeti years before there was like a ban on exports. And RFK's point, which is, I can't ask the guest today. I got to ask or start investigating this a little more. But RFK's point is that let's keep that natural gas at home so that American industry and American consumers and American economics, our economy, can use that instead of selling it overseas to keep it, make our energy more plentiful. That's a hard argument to argue with on the face of it. Now, there's probably a million little things in there, and I'm not sure I want the government banning natural gas exports, but it's compelling. So they call it, okay, so let's go back. His strategy includes staking out positions well to Biden's left, such as calling for a permanent ban on natural gas exports, even as Kennedy has shifted toward more conservative stances on controversies such as fracking. And he's adorning these positions with a kind of anti-big government, anti-corporate rhetoric that flourished among populists of all stripe during the COVID-19 pandemic. Bingo. This is good reporting by Scott Walter. This is exactly correct. This is why you almost have a third party, I don't want to call it the RFK party, but sort of I call it the red-pilled party. This is why I always talk about Naomi Wolf and Jimmy Dore, elements of Bill Maher creeping in, but you also have Russell Brand and you have... Greenwald. I'm thinking of Jeff Greenfield from ABC News. And you have all of these former, more doctrinaire liberals who are now like, hey, I care about free speech. I care about fighting government tyranny. I care about democracy more than they do about left, right. So continuing with this article in E&E. It's an open question whether the approach poses a greater danger to Biden, given RFK's strong time, or Trump, who's begun attacking RFK Jr. as a supporter of the Green New scam. Now, I'm sure he supported the policies similar to that. I don't know that RFK has actually endorsed the Green New Deal. I'm not sure. In an interview with Politico, I'm not sure if he had at one point. I don't think he would today. He's never talked about it. In an interview with Politico, E&E News, Kennedy said he's trying to craft a climate policy that makes sense to skeptics and activists alike. I'm listening. It's a platform that draws on his decades of experience as a leading environmentalist, while also leaving room for conspiracy theories and those who reject climate science. Now, Scott Waldron's reporting just went, took a nosedive in that sentence. Conspiracy theories and those who reject climate science. Yes, we reject climate science. You reject COVID science if you didn't support what the World Health Organization and Anthony Fauci said. I reject epidemiological science. I'm a science denier. That's the mentality of this reporter, Scott Walden. He just blew the whole article in one sentence. But anyway, there's still a lot of good information here. One issue where Kennedy has aligned himself is a call for the U.S. Role as the world's largest exporter of liquefied natural gas. He said he would ban the exports altogether, in contrast to Biden, whose administration announced they're pausing exports. Biden's pause has angered Republican lawmakers, fossil fuel companies, thrown a scare into U.S. allies. Part of the problem here is they committed these to Europe to help them after the Russian invasion and the sanctions. And Europe was supposed to get our gas to help ameliorate their energy problems. And then Biden's pausing it. So that's not good foreign policy wise. And it's also not good commitment wise. Kennedy is not one to want an export ban for environmental reasons, but rather to protect U.S. gas reserves from being depleted. I don't know that they're going to be depleted, but there's a point to be made there that it'd be nice to have this and for homegrown energy rather than going away to another country. Kennedy also wants to roll back the Inflation Reduction Act, the president's signature climate bill that funds capture projects favored by the fossil fuel industry. Okay, I'm not going to read you the whole article, but this is really good. Kennedy has criticized the size of his $100 bill, inflation reductions. Americans have had enough of that during COVID. People using the crisis, many others believe, was now manufactured in order to clamp down totalitarian controls and shift wealth upward. Bravo. And they see a mirror of that in climate. Bravo. Bingo. Ding, 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 ding. When you start clamping down controls on people, they rebel, Kennedy said. And that clash is going to make it much more difficult to have real environmental and behavioral change. Okay. So that goes on. And I just wanted to get, to my part of this article. And then I also sent the reporter a actual quote that he said he's going to add into the article, additional quotes, and I'll read those to you real quick, and then I want to get on. Mark Marano, a conservative activist, this is from the E&E article, a conservative activist who runs a prominent climate denial blog, remember, I deny climate, has long been thrilled that Kennedy is now working with COVID and climate skeptics. And I like the phrase COVID skeptic, that's good. You will find many 2024 voters may just as easily pull the lever for RFK Jr. or Donald Trump, he told E&E News last year. Now, I did say that last year. And one final point, and then we'll get off this. These are the quotes I added. The reporter reached out to me for an updated quote. RFK Jr. has the best position on global warming. And I mean that right now because he's not talking about it and he's warning of totalitarian control. It beats Donald Trump's position. When he said he's not going to talk about climate change during the campaign because climate change has been hijacked by the World Economic Forum, the United Nations for totalitarian control of society. My reaction was bingo. I cheered him on. I wish every Republican on Capitol Hill would adopt RFK Jr.'s position on climate change. You don't have to get into any science. Just repeat RFK Jr.'s truth bomb. He is appealing to both skeptics and Trump's base and disaffected Democrats and liberals like Naomi Wolf, Jimmy Dore, Tulsi Gabbard, Russell Brand. My interview with RFK Jr. was conducted 2014 at the New York City Climate March. So that's just a little update there on the latest. And it's a pretty good article, except for the usual just absolute stuff that tanks the article, the narrative crap about I deny climate, I reject science, and we believe in conspiracy theories. It's just, I don't know if he has to do that or if that reporter actually believes it. Scott Waldron, E&E News. Okay, moving along. Joe Biden, prices now 19% higher since Joe Biden took office. This is what's happening in America today, clip one.
This just in, inflation is headed in the wrong direction right now. The latest consumer price report just out shows prices up 3.5%. This over same time last year. CNN's Rahel Solomon just looking through it all, just running into the studio to help us out. What are you seeing in this?
Hey, Kate. So, yeah, you put it pretty well there that this is moving in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. So 3.5% on an annual basis. To put that in context, that is hotter than what we were expecting and certainly hotter than we saw the month prior.
So remember, they kept calling inflation transitional, like it's just, it's just going to come and go. This is real. It's here. And of course, when you're strangling energy and when you're affecting supply chain and you're overregulating any economy, you're going to have inflation. And of course, when you're rationing meat, you're rationing energy, you're rationing transportation, cars. It's just all an absolute simple as pie explanation for what's going on. And of course, you're printing money, you're spending money, national debt, you just go on and on. It's silly. Okay, this is interesting. Former GOP House Speaker Kevin McCarthy explains why, according to him, why he's not a speaker. And it's because of an ethics complaint of a congressman who allegedly slept with a 17-year-old. Bizarre. He also claims that he did not think it was fair that he was taken out, doesn't like the system, and I think it's great. I think they should be able to tank people at the moment's notice. I thought that was the greatest thing that happened, even if his replacement hasn't impressed me at all or that much. He's still better than Kevin McCarthy, and I like the idea that these politicians can have this thriving, powerful career, and then you're gone. Oh, I don't like those rules. I love those rules. Okay, clip two, Kevin McCarthy.
So was it this, you made a lot of concessions in the negotiations.
No, I didn't. Okay.
Is that
Let's get to the bottom of that.
Right?
That is such a misnomer in life. Let me give you the truth about that now. And I'll give you the truth why I'm not speaker. It's because one person, a member of Congress, wanted me to stop an ethics complaint because he slept with a 17-year-old. An ethics complaint that started before I ever became speaker, and that's illegal, and I'm not going to get in the middle. Did he do it or not? I don't know. But an ethics is looking at it. There's other people in jail because of it. And he wanted me to influence it. And you know what? So then they come out and they say, because I kept government open, I'd do it all over again. We're not going to pay our troops. No, I'm going to pay my troops. You can't do the job? Okay. When it comes to the concession, the motion to vacate about one person being able to make that motion, how long has that been in the rules? Forever. The only time it was changed is when Pelosi became speaker the second time. And she put the power with the minority leader. I think it's wrong. I think you elect, let them govern. Now, it takes 218 to have the rule package. There's nothing I can do there. But I had five people who never voted for me anyways in the process. I had eight at the end that did the other. But everybody had to live by it. I live by it. I think today, if you went back to the people that vote, did they think that was a smart vote? I don't think so. I had the choice of having that vote of motion to vacate where you just put the cards in and walk away. No, I made everybody stand up because I think historically it'll be viewed as a very bad thing that happened to our Congress.
Do you think it happens again? I mean, there's now talk that it could happen to this speaker.
No. Two things. The Dems will never let it happen. The interesting part is, you want another inside story? Okay.
Not this crowd.
So I knew I needed to win the majority by 20 votes or I'd have a problem. So I knew on election night I had a problem. But I had tried for speaker before and I made a bad interview and I had to pull out. But as leader, I had never lost a race. I helped us win a majority. I expanded that. I thought I was best prepared.
That's Kevin McCarthy. Blaming it, I believe he's referencing Matt Gaetz, the congressman from Florida who led the ousting of him, talking about the history and talking about how he forced a vote and it was a mistake. Now, if I was a congressman, proudly voted, I'd proudly vote again. It was not a mistake. I love the way he says that's wrong, that I could be, let me govern. No, the idea that you can have the plug pulled on you is awesome. That's exactly what they need. That's real life. Most people in the private sector live with that every day. What do they want to be, like faded politicians? I'm untouchable. The rules protect me. That's what he wants. Rules that protect him. No. Goodbye and good riddance. Don't feel for Kevin McCarthy. He's going to be a zillionaire, lobbying, media contracts, fake book deals. And what I mean by fake book deals is, as a lobbyist, generally you publish a book and the publishers will. The lobbyists will buy a certain set amount of copies and they help juice the sales and you make all this money. You get big book advances. All right. A bunch of nonsense there, but good riddance to Kevin McCarthy. He's no longer in office, but I thought that was interesting. Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg in the United States under Biden, proves that Washington, D.C. is a safe city by mentioning that he walks his dog and everything's fine. Now, he may not mention that he's got a security detail armed. Let's take a look at clip three.
So we need to talk about the reality here. And again, there is a lot of funding and a lot of energy going into telling a different story, especially on ideological news outlets and online. But the simple facts and the simple reality are right here staring us in the face, including the fact that I can safely walk my dog to the Capitol today in a way that you couldn't do when we all got here.
Interesting. Now, right after, this is according to the Washington Examiner newspaper in Washington, D.C., just hours after Buttigieg made that comment about safely walking his dogs, Two people walking their dogs got mugged in Washington, D.C. One was stabbed, and that's according to the Washington Examiner, and no mention of his security detail. The other thing to know about Pete Buttigieg is he claims he rides a bike to work. And someone actually posted this on social media. I've showed this clip before. It's been a while, though. He shows himself riding up to the Department of Transportation, and there's cameras filming him. But what they didn't show is that he was in a big SUV being driven across the city of Washington, D.C., gets out, they take his bike out of the back of the SUV, and then he rides the last couple blocks for the cameras. That, my friends, is Washington, D.C., and he and Kevin McCarthy can have each other. They can complain about the rules and brag about how safe the city is. Okay, CBC interview. This is about, I have a whole bunch of stuff here on the carbon tax and what Justin Trudeau is up to. But I think that, you know what, let's go ahead and play this first one on Justin Trudeau, because we're having a guest, the climate skeptic, Tom Harris from Canada. And I was going to bring these up to him, but let's go ahead and play the first one. Clip four, Trudeau announces payments of $1,800 plus per person, and for Canadian seniors. And keep in mind, he's facing a tougher election year. He'll probably win easily. But he's buying off votes. This is another form of the universal basic income, UBI. Clip four, Justin Trudeau.
Picture the scene. You check your bank account and discover an extra $1,830 waiting for you, a surprise boost that could change everything. This moment isn't just about money. It's a transformative leap forward in securing a brighter, more dignified future for Canada's seniors. Before we dive into today's content, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this video to spread the word about the crucial developments we'll be discussing. Your support helps us amplify the message and make a real difference for seniors across Canada. Now let's get started. Hello everyone, and welcome back to my channel. Today, we have some exciting news to share. This development is a tangible reality that promises to improve the lives of millions of Canadians during their golden years. For too long, our seniors have grappled with insufficient pension incomes, unable to keep pace with the rising cost of living. Shockingly, 25% of Canadian seniors endure poverty, relying on meager fixed incomes that fail to meet skyrocketing expenses. While the government consistently deducts taxes from hardworking Canadians, the return on investment for seniors has often fallen short, leaving many feeling financially insecure. The CPP increase serves as a beacon of hope, offering relief from crippling financial uncertainty. If you or a loved one is a senior struggling to make ends meet, this boost is a much-needed lifeline. The more awareness we raise about this life-changing policy, the greater the impact it can have on those in need. For decades, many seniors have faced constant anxiety, sacrificing basic necessities to maintain shelter and sustenance. This $1,830 payment signifies a profound shift.
Yes, a profound shift. It's an election year, and Trudeau wants to buy votes, or elections coming up. And the problem with this is you saw, this is a pro video of what, making it sound great, everything Trudeau is doing. They said that Canadian seniors are facing skyrocketing costs. Well, I wrote about this in my book, The Great Reset. The reason they're facing skyrocketing costs is because of COVID restrictions, which Trudeau was like the number one, with the top five of the lunatics out there enforcing, supply chain issues, overspending, debt, and of course, printing money, modern monetary theory. That creates skyrocketing prices. And the way to buy votes after that is you just start subsidizing people. You give them more money. And who's going to vote if you're a senior and you need that $1,800 a month, and who wouldn't? Who's going to vote against Trudeau? That's the strategy. It's the lowest form of politics, but it works brilliantly, and it pretty much works every single time. You destroy an economy, centralize it, turn it into an administrative state, make everything more expensive, from gas, food, fuel, energy, housing. And then people complain, and so you just start putting everyone on the payroll. The more people on the payroll, the more you're guaranteed a re-election. All right, and one last clip, and then we'll take a break. Joe Biden, this is our president of the United States, articulating what he hopes his legacy will be. And it's got something to do with the war in Vietnam. I'm sorry, wasn't that back in the 1960s and 70s? Where is Joe Biden's head? Let's watch clip six.
Did you spend a lot of time thinking about what your legacy would look like?
Well, I hope the legacy is that I kept my word, that I said that the reason I was running was to help change the life of ordinary people and reduce the prospect of war. And because of Vietnam, and when I ran, I said that I was once asked, well, why wouldn't, when I was 1 or 29 years old, I said, it must be a secret. And I said, yeah, the secret you got to ask yourself is, what are you willing to lose over? You figure out what you're willing to lose over, you got an idea of what you should be doing. And so I hope my legacy is that I was honest, straightforward, and did what I said.
Yes, and that you prevented war with Vietnam, which is a good thing to have happen. It's hard to believe, you know, well, in some ways he's right, but a lot, he did do what he said, like his executive orders. He came in, started shutting down American energy, raising the cost, implementing ESG, aiding things like transgender, opening up the border. So in a way, yes, he has. But where he lied was knowingly thinking that would improve America and that everyone would be happy. That's where why he has the lowest approval rating of any modern president, even lower than the claimed polls on Donald Trump because of his personality. Okay, we got to take a break. Before we do, the Weekend Truth Festival. If you would like to see all your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shermani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letissier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, Allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK, United Kingdom. All you need to do is bring a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes. Soaking up some good vibes as food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around. Don't hang around because only a limited number of places are still available. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Tom Harris, the International Climate Science Coalition Executive Director. He is a mechanical engineer and project manager, and he's going to be talking about climate, energy, and Justin Trudeau, and probably a little bit about what Trudeau did in Canada during COVID. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Royt.
I saw the information that you shared about the app that endometriosis can take years to diagnose. Why is this and how does the app help make this diagnosis much faster and more accurate?
The time frame from the first onset of symptoms until somebody actually realizes that there's a problem, that's remained fixed at 3 years. So all of our advances have been from when they first present to a GP until a diagnosis has been made. But those first 3 years have not been able to be shifted. And that's really where something like Charlie comes in. Because it's all about telling someone that what you're experiencing is actually quite abnormal.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royt on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go, but I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there, providing hot meals, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding.
To learn more, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, joining us now is Tom Harris, the Executive Director of the International Climate Science Coalition. Welcome to the program, Tom, an old friend. We've known each other for decades. How are things going off in Canada there, Tom?
Oh, well, you know, the carbon tax went up another, 25%. And it's interesting, Mark, you know, Statistics Canada just released the inflation numbers for February, I believe it was, and the Canadian average was 2.8%, except for Saskatchewan, who actually are refusing to collect the carbon tax. They're fighting with Trudeau on this, and their inflation rate was only 1.7%. Okay, and the Stats Can actually admitted that the reason why they have so much less inflation is because they're saying, no, we're not going to collect your tax.
Well, actually, on that point, I have a CBC interview with the parliamentary budget officer, and this didn't go as planned. Let's play. Let me get the clip here. This is clip 5 of hour 1. Let's watch this clip and then you can react.
Parliamentary budget officer Yves Giroux, who joins me now. Sir, it's good to see you again.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
So you, I'm sure, have been watching what's been happening in the House of Commons. The conclusions in your report, they're being cited by the Conservatives in particular as proof that Canadians are worse off because of carbon pricing, and that means this policy needs to go. Is that a fair representation of your findings?
Well, it's a representation of our findings once you also include the economic impacts of introducing a carbon tax. So there's the fiscal impact on households paying the tax versus the amount of the rebate that households are receiving. But once you also include the economic impacts due to the introduction of a carbon tax, for example, the reduction in activity or the slower growth in economic activity in some sectors, then that's the impact. But once you also include the economic impacts due to the introduction of a carbon tax, for example, the reduction in activity or the slower growth in economic activity in some sectors, then that's the impact.
Wow, that was the parliamentary budget on CBC. It appeared that they wanted him to refute all these claims, and he basically confirmed it. Tell us how Justin Trudeau sold the carbon tax, and tell us how Canadians feel about the carbon tax.
Well, he sold it by telling us that most people, 80% of people, he said, will get more rebate back than they actually pay in the carbon tax. But what he's not including is what the parliamentary budget officer is including. And that is, you know, all through the supply chain, everything is going to cost more. The fuel for the trucks to take the food to the grocery store. And of course, the farmers, when they have to pay all sorts of different extra taxes. So when you add it all up and you look at the impact on the economy and how it affects individuals, no question about it, you're poorer with the carbon tax. And the PBO, the parliamentary budget officer, amazing that he had the courage to say what was real.
Yeah, a lot of times these unelected bureaucrats, I believe he's not a, he doesn't stand for office. They can sometimes really surprise you. We've had similar with our congressional budget office. You get some really astute analysis. You think, oh, they're partisan, but they sometimes surprise you. Tell us what the situation is in Canada with Trudeau. Is he basically your prime minister for life? Do you have term limits on a prime minister?
No.
When is he
no.
for re-election? And is there any hope of ever getting rid of him? Or is he just, again, are you stuck with him for the rest of his life?
Oh, well, very possibly we're stuck with him for the rest of his life. I mean, it's funny because his opinion polls are horrible right now. But Canada has a very unusual system where if he can go to the governor, let's say he loses the next election. Okay. He can still go to the governor general and say, with the help of the NDP, I have a majority now in the House and I can continue to rule. So he can lose the election by a long way as long as his number of seats plus the NDP, where are the socialists, if they add together and they're more than the conservatives, even if the conservatives won both the popular vote and the number of seats, Trudeau stays prime minister and we have no time limit. So he could stay forever. So it's very important. The conservatives not only have to win a majority of seats, they have to win more seats than both the liberals and the conservatives combined. And that's quite a challenge. That's quite a challenge.
That blows my mind. I mean, I'm not even sure I understand your explanation. I mean, you could try again, but it just blows my mind how complex that system is. Okay, let's talk about, how do you say his last name? Pierre Poilievre? I always mess it up.
Poilievre, yeah.
Poilievre. Yeah,
Pierre. Poilievre, he's interesting because, you know, when when Trump withdrew the United States from the Paris Agreement, Trudeau put forward a reaffirmation of the Paris Agreement to show how Canada was still on board. And it was interesting because the conservative whip told them all they had to support this thing. Now, there were actually a number of conservatives who wouldn't support it, so they just didn't attend the parliament that day, so they wouldn't vote against it. They'd probably been kicked out of the party. And unfortunately, Pierre Poilievre actually voted in favor of reaffirming the Paris Agreement. And, you know, Pierre Poilievre seems to think he can bring in people from the left more and more into his fold by supporting things like carbon dioxide sequestration, okay, which is an absolute disaster. He also talks about bringing in more and more electric vehicles to stop climate change. And he wants developing countries to get off coal and get onto our clean natural gas because he wants to reduce greenhouse gases. So, you know, I had an article published across Canada that I shared with you in the Toronto Sun, and it was in all the different Sun newspapers. And basically, I said, you know, their policies and their choice of language, carbon emissions, you know, that sort of thing, they're actually supporting the climate scare. And you might remember, Mark, in the book 1984, there was an appendix, a 10-page appendix, all about newspeak, you know, how the government actually changes the thinking pattern of the population by using certain words. And they had duck speak as well, which was just, you know, boom, saying things quickly, just like the quacking of a duck. You didn't even have to think, you know. Well, that's what's happening here is Pierre Poilievre is actually using the language of the left in his climate stuff. Now he says, no tax, axe the tax, spike the hike. Yeah, okay, that's fine. But the tax is only a symptom of the disease. And the disease is the climate scare. So as long as they're supporting the climate scare, they can come up with regulations, which is what the previous conservative leader did. He had regulations instead of tax. Economists actually assessed that and they found out the regulations would be more expensive than the tax. So, you know, what I'm encouraging them to do, and they just had the Canada Strong and Free Networking Conference downtown. I just got back from it. I was passing out this article that I wrote saying, stop supporting the climate scare. This is nuts. You can be against the carbon tax, but yeah, that's good. But don't support the climate scare. That, you know, that wants to turn everything off in Canada. We're a hydrocarbon-based society, and that's where we get most of our resource money.
Yeah, I mean, we had the same problem here in the United States with every Republican presidential nominee before Donald Trump. And that would include, yeah. I mean, even George H.W. Bush got us into the Rio Earth Summit, which set up the UN Climate Summit. Bob Dole would never really challenge it. Of course, George W. Bush totally supported the climate and all the UN and rubber stamping. John McCain was a big supporter. Mitt Romney was a huge supporter. So Donald Trump was really our first candidate to oppose it. I mean, since Reagan, yeah. But it really was a big issue with Reagan. So also we have Kevin McCarthy, who I showed a clip of earlier, who's lamenting he got thrown out of office. He was our House Majority Leader. He used to always say, climate's a problem. Republicans believe in solutions, and we're going to do the same thing. We're going to plant trees. We're going to capture carbon. And I played the clip of Pierre Poilievre earlier, about a month ago, where he said exactly what you said. He says, climate's a problem, and we need capture. So here's the question. Why is carbon capture? I look at carbon capture, at least here in the United States, this is the Republicans' way to pay off big donors because they can give out the contracts to the people they want. They're the ones pushing this, it seems like, more than Democrats and the tree planting. And the Democrats, of course, give it to the green energy slush fund, the failed solar and wind. But is that what's happening, the same thing in Canada? Is this the conservative parties, literally their way to pay off their donors is offer them carbon capture money?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's a way for the oil and gas companies to think that they're going to get some sort of a free pass. But, you know, there are a lot of problems with carbon capture. And it's not really carbon, of course, it's carbon dioxide. And the whole concept that you collect carbon dioxide, which is it's plant food, you pump it hundreds of miles to some sort of underground storage location. You have to compress it and then you stuff it underground. I mean, this is really loony. It's going to increase the cost of electricity, let's say, from coal stations so much that Bob Murray, you might remember him when he was the head of Murray Energy, he testified before the U.S. Congress and he said, you realize that carbon sequestration is actually code for no coal. Okay. Now in Canada, Alberta gets a lot of its electricity from coal. So the very last thing that Pierre Poilievre should be doing is promoting carbon sequestration. Carbon sequestration is also, it's not really being demonstrated at scale. Okay. The actual demonstration projects are very small. And, you know, we've not done this before at the kind of scale that would be required. And you know, Mark, one other thing that people have to realize is that there have been some natural bubbles of carbon dioxide escape. For example, in the Cameroons, Lake Nagos, there was a massive bubble of CO2 that came up from a natural formation. And it was interesting because, of course, it's heavier than air. So it displaces air. And there's a story about a guy who suddenly started seeing cows falling dead all around him and people, you know, passing out. And so he jumped on his motorcycle and by good luck, he drove in the right direction. And of course, what was happening is the carbon bubble was actually displacing the oxygen. And so it's not like CO2 is poison or anything, but this big CO2 bubble, it rolled down the countryside and it killed hundreds and hundreds of livestock and dozens of people. So potentially, if you lived near a CO2 sequestration site, right, you wouldn't necessarily be too happy about that because the trouble is, of course, it doesn't smell like anything. You can't see it. So all that would happen is you'd start to see animals and people just pass out. So it's not a good idea to store it concentrated at all. And it's not necessary. And it's very expensive.
Well, in Canada now, again, your electoral system is, to me, just bonkers. That didn't make any sense.
Yeah, like you can lose the election and still be prime minister.
Yeah, that's I don't like that. But here's the thing. If you look at the United States since COVID, March of 2020, with all the lockdowns and all the governors and going crazy and stay-at-home orders, church closures, we had a lot of people red-pilled. Prominent liberals. And one of them was RFK Jr., I would argue, because he's running for president. This is the guy that went to jail climate deniers at the Hague, or energy CEOs. He wanted to punish climate skeptic politicians. He now says, I won't talk about climate change during this campaign. I don't care if you believe in it. It's not an issue for me because climate has been hijacked by the World Economic Forum and the United Nations for totalitarian control of society. And we have people from Russell Brand, Jimmy Dore, Naomi Wolf. They're like major climate skeptics in many ways. Maybe not Russell Brand, but certainly Jimmy Dore, Naomi Wolf calls the Green New Deal fraud. Is that same phenomena happening in Canada where you have public intellectuals, you have a lot of the voters who didn't get it before, but it just seems like in America, people, it's so easy. I guess here's a simple question. In America, it's the easiest sell in the world for climate skepticism right now because years ago, it'd be always like, can all those scientists be wrong? You disagree with NASA? Where's your climate? Now it's like, all you have to say is, yeah, it's like basically saying if you disagree with Anthony Fauci, you are anti-science. That's what climate's been like for years. And people get it. In fact, prominent liberals get it. So what's it like in Canada? Is it still just chilling and no one's allowed to dissent?
Yeah, pretty well. I mean, we have some people like Jordan Peterson, who obviously dissents. I mean, he thinks that it's a bunch of nonsense. But generally speaking, no, our intellectuals are all on board. And, you know, we haven't experienced enough pain yet. I think that's what it boils down to. You know, Benny Pizer from the Global Warming Policy Foundation, he spoke yesterday at the conference. And what he said is what's happening in Europe is a warning to Canada. You know, don't go down our path. And he thinks, you know, I spoke to him later, and he thinks that we have to experience a lot more pain before we'll actually start to say, hey, do we really have to do this? You know, and then books like this, Climate Change Reconsidered, which people can check out on the web, thousands of references, go to climatechangereconsidered.org. Then they start to say, do we have to do it? And the answer is no, because there's no climate crisis, and thousands of scientists will support that statement. So I don't think we're ready yet. I honestly think that we need to have more pain, more blackouts, you know, more massive price increases before people start to ask, do we have to do this?
All right, we take a break. We're talking with Tom Harris, the executive director of the International Climate Science Coalition. What city are you based in Canada? Is it Ottawa?
In the capital with all the liberal woke people.
That's
in
right.
Ottawa.
Well, I would like to talk to you a little bit more about Trudeau when we come back. And is there an alternative to Pierre Poilievre to save Canada? This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Tom Harris.
Not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Need a ride?
Yeah!
Driving with kids is a big responsibility.
Hop in and buckle up!
So don't sweat the small stuff.
You got paint all over our paper!
Get the big stuff right instead.
What does that mean?
Like making sure your kids are in the correct car seat and buckled up for safer travel.
That deserves a wiggly wiggly wig!
To make sure your child is in the right seat for their age and size, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Beep beep! Yeah!
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received 2 stents in my arteries, stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We're talking with Tom Harris, Executive Director of the International Climate Science Coalition. All right, how far down the path of green energy has Canada gone? I assume you're more advanced, shall we say, I hate to use that word, than the United States in terms of solar and wind. How has it messed up your electrical grid?
Oh, wow. It's really messed it up. I mean, back in February, Alberta, the capital of Canada's hydrocarbon industry, came within an inch of a total blackout, you know, rolling blackouts across the whole province. And they had to rely on electricity from Saskatchewan that was provided by coal. Okay. So it was quite funny because the premier of Saskatchewan, he said on Twitter, he said, yeah, we're glad to provide Alberta with the electricity we need, providing that electricity from what Justin Trudeau wants to get rid of, which is coal. And we won't, he said. And so, yeah, they've gone really haywire, even in Alberta, bringing in more and more wind and solar power. And you know, I think, Mark, partly in answer to your previous question, how do we get people to wake up? I think it's by understanding the consequences of the climate scare. And here is one of them. Okay. You see that dirty water?
Yeah.
I have a friend who lives way out in the country, and she had beautiful, clean, pristine water for generations. She lived on her farm, and her family did, literally for 100 years, no problems with their water. And then they started building massive 60-story wind turbines, and that's what her water looks like now. Okay. I mean, there's no water main even remotely close to her. So she has to go into town several times a week and fill up gallon jugs of water and lug it back home. And what's happened is when they built the wind turbine, they had to drill these piles, massive piles, right through the aquifer, and it breaks the black shale coating under the aquifer, and it releases all this stuff into the water. And it's interesting, the government wouldn't do proper testing. So she did a GoFundMe, and she got the water tested. And what she found was in the sediments, and you see the sediments at the bottom here, was mercury and lead and arsenic and copper and all kinds of things. I mean, it's just horrible for them. And that is one of the outcomes of the climate scare, because they think that they can put in wind turbines and reduce the CO2 emissions. Now, it's interesting because since then, I've interviewed her on my radio show on AmericaOutloud.net.news. And what I'm finding is these wind turbine people, the people who hate the wind turbines for that reason and because of infrasound and all sorts of reasons, they are now becoming climate skeptics because they are feeling the pain because of the climate scare. And so I think that's the key, is you have to find people who are being hurt by the climate scare, and in this case the wind turbine people that have them right near their farms, that is, you know, and then suddenly they say, oh, and you're right, there is no climate scare, so we don't even need these turbines. So yeah, that's the way to get people to start paying attention, is show them, whoa, this is what's coming down the pipe to your farm next.
Yeah, I have this article here. This is from 2 years ago. Wind turbines have an average of 12,000 gallons of oil for a typical wind farm. They use oil. Of course, all that doesn't go into all the materials and excavation needed for all the rare earth materials coming from China chiefly. So how did they get this far with this green energy climate scare? I mean, in your history of prime ministers, I remember back 2006. What was the name of your prime minister? Because he actually had 50 scientists, and I think you were part of this effort, advised him not to support basically the UN climate process.
Stephen Harper.
Stephen Harper. Yeah. Have you ever had a leader of the opposition to the Trudeau Liberal government that's ever had a right position on climate and energy?
Well, they often do in opposition, like Stephen Harper, when he was the head of the predecessor of
the
Canadian.
They have no power. Yeah.
Well, right. And in fact, Stephen Harper, when he was head of the Canadian Alliance, which was the sort of pre-conservative party, he wrote a letter to supporters of the Canadian Alliance, and he said that the Kyoto Protocol, because that's what they were dealing with in those days, was, and these are the exact words he used, he called it a money-sucking socialist scheme, okay? So
brilliant.
So we thought we were getting somebody who was going to be a true climate realist, somebody who would, you know, understand what's real. But after he got into power, he supported, and his environment minister, John Baird, they supported the Cancun summit. Okay, they were gung-ho about, you know, stock. So what they did is they read the tea leaves in the polls, and of course the polls are not trustworthy anyways, but they decided they would move over and support the climate scare. So we've never had a conservative prime minister who actually has stood up to this. You know, I used to work for Bob Mills, who was the opposition environment critic. I was his legislative assistant, and he gave some really wonderful speeches against the climate scare, and he quoted all the science and talked about the bad effects of it and everything else. But he changed sides too. So what happens, you know, I was at the conference a couple of years ago, the one that I just got out of, and they were talking all about a conservative approach to stopping climate change. So I went to the chairman afterwards, and I said, do you think that humans are causing a dangerous climate crisis? And he said, no. I said, well, then why are you presenting a solution to something that you don't think exists? And he said, oh yeah, well, we fought that war and we lost it. Well, no, they never fought the war. They did a couple of battles, and then they raised the white flag. And, you know, that's the difference between the left and the right. Only recently, I think, have the right started to really stand up and make a noise. And that's what we've been doing in Ottawa, actually. We've got a lot of really strong volunteers, some of them ladies, actually, some women who have really spoken out. You know, they went to the debates for the mayor election. And I can remember one of the ladies, Danielle Mayo, she went to the microphone, a French-Canadian lady, and she said, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother. I don't want to see children in the mines in the Congo just so I can drive an EV, you know. And so yes. What's happening is those people, very brave people from Action for Canada, are speaking out. But most people are not yet. They have to feel more pain.
But whether it's Stephen Harper or Pierre Poilievre, what would happen to them if they just challenged the premise, the narrative of climate change? Are they afraid they would just lose their standing in polite society? Would even the impolite attack them? Like,
well, that's right. Yeah. It's interesting, Mark, you know, they really don't understand the dynamics of what drives public opinion. You know, there was a study done in 2012 by researchers from McGill University, Drexel, and Ohio State. And the purpose of the study was to find out what was the primary driver of public opinion on climate in the United States. And they looked at the science reports, they looked at extreme weather, they looked at the actions of activists, they looked at the media. And then they looked at the impact of political statements from political leaders. And that was the key ingredient. They found that when John McCain, for example, a Republican, was supporting the climate scare, and the Republican establishment was as well, so you had both sides, the Republicans and Democrats, both supporting the climate scare, the public agreed. There was, you know, we had to take a serious action. But when the Republicans disagreed, then the public were much less supportive of action on climate change. So what they concluded in this report, and it's backed up by a lot of other studies, is that the statements by leading politicians in society has much more influence on public opinion than they actually give it credit. And, you know, it's interesting. I hear so often from the conservative strategists, oh, no, we can't say what you say. We agree with you, but we can't say it. Because yes. The public opinion is against it. But what they don't get, it's so dumb. They just, I guess they're not reading these papers. But what they don't get is that they are the drivers of public opinion to a considerable extent. And you know, I interviewed Joseph Benamy, who's a political advisor. He actually directly advised Stephen Harper. And he said, look, he said, when people sit around the dining room table and they're talking about climate change, they talk about what the politicians say. They don't say, oh, CNN said this. No, they talk about the leaders, the people that are running to be government, and they debate those policies. So if they were to come out, you know, we don't have an election tomorrow, and I wouldn't recommend they do this the day before an election, but they have a good year and a half before the next election. And during that time, they have to start setting the stage so that eventually they can say, you know, there really is not enough evidence to support the climate scare. But what they have to start with doing is stop using the language of their enemy. You know, in martial arts, they say you should fight your fight, not the fight of your enemy. But they are, in fact, using the language of climate alarmism, even though when you corner them and ask them privately, they'll say, no, I don't believe any of that. So they have to have a long-term strategy building up to the point where they can finally say safely, look, the evidence does not support the climate scare. We're pulling the rug out from under these programs. We are going to save Canada economically and from an energy security perspective. So vote for us. And if you do it right and you build it up gradually, you bring in scientists from both sides, you let them both speak. Yeah, they can do it, but they got to do it intelligently.
Yeah. In fact, when Donald Trump was very skeptical, the United States polling showed Republican Party got record skepticism. And I remember a poll about 15 years ago, 12 years ago, Václav Klaus, the former president of Czech Republic, was a leading outspoken skeptic, wrote books on it, spoke at UN summits all over the world against the entire climate scare. And guess when they did polling in Europe, guess which country had the most skeptical residents? And it was Czech Republic. So it is exactly to your point. The more you speak out, people will follow. Their hunger for that kind of politician to speak.
They want honesty, and they're sick of all the, you know, the politicians saying what's politically correct. And you know, I think in Canada, there's a very strong freedom movement. People that are very upset about the direction we've gone in all kinds of things, you know, the vaccine stuff and all that. In fact, tomorrow I'm speaking at noon at Parliament Hill, specifically on the whole freedom issue. And we're going to talk about a lot of the things you have in your book, you know, how this is a threat to freedom. Climate lockdowns are coming next. You know, you wait.
Now, what's your policy? Just give us a quick overview. What's the policy in Canada with EV mandates and gas-powered car bans? And what's the policy with them coming after nitrogen fertilizer, high-yield agriculture, and coming after meat? Are you guys doing the same things that we're finding has happened in the United States?
We're doing essentially exactly the same thing. And in fact, it's interesting because a Canadian Farmers Association are bringing me in to speak actually on the other side of the province later in the summer. And they want me specifically to talk about, okay, what's the story with respect to nitrous oxide? You know, are we really going to have to cut our fertilizer use in half? You know, and as you know, Will Happer, who was an advisor to Trump, he shows that you don't have to worry about nitrous oxide. Forget it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing. So give us some hope. We have you have about 40 seconds left here in the program. Just give us some hope. How does Canada get rid of Trudeau? How does Canada fight back this whole climate scare green agenda?
Well, what they need to do is what they did in a little town just south of Ottawa. They were considering bringing in the best system, battery energy storage systems. And they arranged, you know, through various allies of ours, to bring in about 100 people to the industry presentation. And they were so aggressive. You know, there were two councillors who were also from the city council who were at that meeting. And they looked around and they saw, my God, they're so aggressive. And guess what? 3 days later, they killed the project.
Wow, that's a good story. All right, well, thank you. Tom Harris, Executive Director, International Climate Science Coalition. Thank you for joining the program today. We hope to see you again, and let us keep track of Justin Trudeau when he's actually up for a vote. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.